From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Greetings, my fellow Frisbee freaks, and welcome to the Disc Golf News for the week of June 28th. I'm Brian Sullivan. Coming up this time, results from the American Express Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open, and we'll get a preview of the upcoming holiday weekend's Patapsco Picnic in Maryland. Pro disc golfer Dave Feldberg talks about the coolest of cool trick shots, the 360-degree turnaround, in this week's 60-second clinic. Plus, tracking the number of players at your course. We'll talk with Tom Usselman, who's been using player statistics to get new courses in the ground.
If you have something you want to leverage, which we do, then, you know, it's a valuable tool. You've got to have something other than the case of saying, oh, please give us a new course. You've got to make the case.
It's PDGA Radio News, and it's sponsored this and every week by Discovering the World. You can discover them at dtworld.com.
Disc golfing should be inexpensive and fun. Discovering the World wants nothing more than to help you have fun. They offer a wide variety of disc golf and PDGA products. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Orders ship within 24 hours, and there's a retail location open 7 days a week to deal with you personally. Call 714-522-2202 or visit dtworld.com to see the full selection available now from Discovering the World.
The big arms were in Pennsylvania last weekend for the American Express Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open. Results are right now, beginning with the Masters Division, and who else but the little man with the big arm? Brad Hammack tears it up and wins this one by 14 over Ontario's Eric Vandenberg. It was a three-way tie for third, Billy Crump, Doug Kuria, and Robin Billick. To the Women's Division, where Elaine King came into this one as a seven-time defending champ. Make it eight. She wins by six over the always tough Leslie Herndon. Jess Redding manages to squeak past Belle Jenkins to take third. Now, to the Open Division, where Kevin McCoy bags his second big win of the season. And this one, in a dogfight, he wins after a big third round over Brian Schweberger, who takes second place. Stevie Brinster of New Jersey takes third. And that is how it went down last weekend at the American Express Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open. Time now for the 60-second clinic. This week, professional disc golfer David Feldberg talks about the coolest of cool trick shots, the 360-degree turnaround drive. Using this drive, you can find a big distance, but you can also find yourself well off of the fairway, as Mr. Feldberg explains.
A 360 turnaround drive is one where you start away from facing the target, and then you turn your body all the way around, away from the target, and then towards the target again, making a full 360 to really rip the disc. Well, I think the reason to do a turnaround is to generate a lot of power so that you can get your hips turned away from the target and then get all your power before you turn your hips back towards the target and rip it. I mean, you can gain a lot of extra power turning all the way around than you do just a half turn when you do your regular throw. The disadvantages of throwing a 360 turnaround is you can spray it anywhere. I used to use it a lot in golf tournaments off the tee, and I would be known for throwing in the wrong fairway 420 feet. But I would say you need to only use this in an area where you're not trying to get a birdie, more like you're just trying to get 400 or 500 to 600 feet off the tee to make an easier par 4 into a par 3. I'd say the best 360 I've ever seen was Ken Jarvis out of San Diego, California. He used it the most effective and can use it in a controlled setting off the tee pad, not spray. Well, I've seen him throw very comfortably with, it looks like, the same speed as a regular person's backhand. About 600 feet plus easy, with just a nice 1.5 step, smooth turnaround all the way around. It looks like he's in slow motion, but it goes 650 every time. To summarize, the 360 is a good turnaround shot to gain distance, but I rarely use it in a golf tournament. It's very good for distance contests, showing off with your buddies, but all around in a golf tournament, I'd only use it in a hole that was more than 600 feet with no chance of going OB off the tee. So maybe you want to gain it and make a par 4, a 200-foot approach instead of a 400-foot approach. That would be the only good reason to use one of these, and keep it in the field, it's fun.
David Feldberg has been a professional touring disc golfer for the past 5 years. One thing he did not caution you on is doing a 360 turnaround drive while trying to click your heels in midair. As Mr. Feldberg found out, that can lead to injury, and we don't recommend you try that at home or anywhere else. and you're listening to PDGA Radio News. In the big picture this week, there's a course at Burke Lake Park in Fairfax Station, Virginia, just outside of our nation's capital, where the local club has a very good idea of how many players are moving through their course every week, every month, and every year. And they're using that information to their advantage by taking it to the local parks department and requesting not only upgrades to the current course, but asking for new courses as well, and they're finding success. The secretary of the Disc Golf Club of Northern Virginia is Tom Usselman, and we tracked him down this week at home.
Tom Usselman, welcome to PDGA Radio.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. Let me ask you this. You've been collecting statistics on the number of players at your local course.
Well, actually, we have five local courses in Northern Virginia, and one that's heavily used, and we've been collecting the statistics there. And the reason why is because we've had the opportunity to develop maybe two new courses in the region, and this is the political information that we need in order to convince the county supervisors.
Tell me about this particular course. What type of players does it usually draw?
Well, the course was installed in 1979 or 1980, there's some debate, but it was a very challenging, very tight, short course. It was from about 1985 to 1997, it hosted an A-tier event, but because it's so short, it became too easy for most of the pros. But again, it was very tight, and there were a lot of trees hit. Right now, we attract primarily, I would say, the recreational players, the high school students, college students in the area, and it's more of, like I said, a recreational, fun group to get together with. It's not as competitive as we would like.
But there are plenty of recreational players. So you decided to start collecting information on how many players were coming through this park. Tell me how you collect that information.
Well, the information that we collect was primarily induced by some of our friends in the mountain biking organization who needed statistics on how many people use their trails. So we installed essentially a sign-in box, which was designed off of theirs, which essentially recorded the number of people in their group and their zip code. No names or other information. And we asked them to sign in only once each day they play. Even if they played three or four rounds, they only signed in once. It took a while to get people to sign in, but most people now religiously sign in, and now we collect this demographic information based on where they're coming from in a broad geocentric type arrangement.
So you're not asking for their name necessarily?
No. And if we ask for their names, we'd probably get the Joe Schmo and whatever. Most people do not want to give out information.
So what specifically are you asking them?
Zip code and the number of people in their group.
Okay. And if they're submitting this information voluntarily, how do you determine the number of players who are not signing in?
Well, we often, several of us will go around the course as we play ourselves and ask, have you signed in? And, oh, no, what's that? What do you mean sign in? They had no idea there was a sign-in box. So when we initially installed it, we probably only got 40% of the people who actually played sign in. After the last 12 months, we're now probably up to about 70 or maybe 75% of the people who play actually sign in. So it's an indicator. The statistics are not hard, but it does provide an arguing point for what we want, which is improving the maintenance on the course, developing new courses in the county, and getting new baskets on our existing course.
Tom, you've been collecting this information for how long now?
About 14 months.
Okay, and what results have you found?
Well, right now we average probably on the weekends over 125 to 150 players. Each day on the weekend. During the week, we average probably about 70, except during the winter months, then it drops down way low because snow and ice. Snow and ice is not good on the tee pads.
right now I'm looking at a web page with your statistics since last spring, and it looks like of all the players that this course attracts, about 15 to 20% of them are non-local players. So tell me, what does that tell you, and how can you use that information to benefit your future presentations to the local parks?
Well, essentially the park charges money to enter the park for non-county residents. So that if we can say that 15 to 20% come from outside the county, that means they may have had to pay at the gate. Not necessarily, they could have come in with a friend who is a county resident and just entered their zip code as a non-county person. There's no way to really understand that, track that without any further information. And people don't want to provide more information than possible.
And Tom, finally, are there any tips that you can offer our listeners who want to put a similar program into place at their park?
Well, that's a good question. It's a question of what type of statistics do you want to build up? How can you use them? If you have nothing to use them for, then there's no need to go through the hassle. And it is sometimes a hassle to, compile the numbers weekly, do the zip code sorts, and everything else. But I find it very valuable from the point of making a case, because the county officials had absolutely no idea. Some of them says, oh, nobody ever uses that course. And I come up with a stack of pages of sign-in sheets and the statistics, and they say, oh, my goodness, more people use this than almost anything else at the park. So, from the political leverage, that is the – if you have something you want to leverage – which we do, then, it's a valuable tool. You got to have something other than the case of saying, oh, please give us a new course. You've got to make the case.
Well, Tom Usselman, thanks very much for your time today, and by all means, keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you, Brian, for calling, and I appreciate the chance to talk with you.
Tom Usselman is the secretary of the Disc Golf Club of Northern Virginia. We spoke to him at his home in Alexandria. For more information, go to dgcnv.org. That is short for Disc Golf Club of Northern Virginia. And you're listening to PDGA Radio News. The Touring Pros will be providing the Disc Golf Fireworks this weekend at the Patapsco Picnic in Marriottsville, Maryland. Tournament official Jim Myers gives us a preview.
This will be the 7th annual Patapsco Picnic, and it brings people out of the woodwork because of the diversity in the course. We've really never had a repeat winner in the open division. Our past winners are Myers, Mela, Moser, Gangloff, Leonard, and Brinster won it last year. So it's not easy to repeat at this course. Ken Climo came to the course, and he played it and actually lost on the very last hole by one stroke, and he went home and claimed it to be in his top group of courses that he's ever played. So that was a rousing endorsement from the king.
And has there been an equal variation in the winners on the women's side?
Elaine King likes this course a lot, and she was our winner last year, and she is a repeat winner. That also has been varied. It's not an easy task, this course. It's just not easy to, come back and do the same things that you did the year before.
Well, you say Kenny Climo now ranks this among his top courses, so give me an idea of what kind of challenges the players are going to be facing this weekend.
Well, the course itself has, it's basically rolling hills. It has half the holes in the woods, half the holes out in the open. It's basically even split between lefty and righty holes, so it's very fair. There's no favoritism there. The course is going to start out at the longest layout, which is 9236 for 18 holes, and it'll finish after the fourth round at 5331. So it'll go from extremely tough to a fairly birdieable course at the very end.
And Jim, what makes this event truly unique on the PDGA schedule?
I think the most unique thing about it is the course itself. The course, you've been there, it's just beautiful country. It has it all. The course, we basically have people come out to the course and they stop at Kmart, they buy lids and they take eights on the holes and they love it. And we basically keep the course in a six long, six medium, six short layout. So you got par three, four, five. you know, all over the course.
Jim No Spin Myers is a tournament official for this weekend's Super Tour event, the Patapsco Picnic in Marriottsville, Maryland. Lots of other things going on this holiday weekend, July 3rd and 4th, including a couple of Super Tour events in Finland. It's the Finnish Open, and in Lakewood, Washington, the Fort Steele Coombe Open. A couple of great events there. In North Carolina, it's the Zebulon Cha-Ching and Zing, and in Sterling, Illinois, it's the Jaybird Cynicissi Open. They're celebrating the National Cherry Festival in Traverse City, Michigan, and they're celebrating with a cool tournament. In Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Mad City Open Am Weekend, and in Austin, Minnesota, the Spamtown Open. Grass Valley, California, hosting Tony's Mountain Golf Challenge. And in Rochester, New York, a couple events, the New York State Doubles Championships and Let Freedom Ka-Ching. Plus, Highbridge, Wisconsin, hosting the Highbridge Opener this weekend. And in Round Top, Texas, it's the Disc Golf Store Pro-Am World's Invitational. Check out the full list at PDGA.com and tell them PDGA Radio sent you. And finally this week, a quick reminder for you to return your World's registration and payment. Note the "and payment" part of that statement. No later than July 26th. Otherwise, you will be done out of there. You will not play. And we certainly don't want to see that. So get those registrations and payments in no later than July 26th. And you, too, will be enjoying all the fun and festivities at the Disc Golf Pro-Am World Championships this summer in Des Moines. And that is the Disc Golf News for the week of June 28th. For the PDGA, I'm Brian Sullivan. Our sponsors are Discovering the World. You can discover them at dtworld.com. And if you had feedback, story ideas, whatever, send them along to PDGA Radio at pdga.com. Hope you have a great 4th of July. Until next week, keep them in the fairway.